Okay, welcome everybody to our monthly nutrition endocrinology presentation. I'm Lisa Fouladi. Today is October 28th, and I'm one of Dr. Rita Marie's nutrition endocrinology coaches. We just renamed ourselves this year. And I'd like to introduce you, I'm really excited to introduce Julie O'Connor to you. She's also one of Rita Marie's coaches. And she has a master's in nutrition, and she's a health writer and a coach. I'd like to tell you a little bit about Julie before handing it over to her for her presentation. Julie is a holistic nutritionist, a writer, and health wellness coach based in Portland, Oregon. And she specializes in supporting people who are experiencing digestive distress, anxiety, fatigue, and brain fog to optimize their health and to repair their relationship to food. After 2 decades in the computer hardware and corporate venture capital industry, she was inspired by her own well-being challenges to return to her behavioral science roots and pursue graduate study in clinical nutrition. Today, she develops evidence-based nutrition content, curriculum, and programs while coaching and counseling people who want to improve their health more holistically with food and nutraceuticals as a first line of defense before pharmaceutical interventions. Julie is a self-described foodie, recipe developer, and writer for publications, as well as practitioners and medical doctors. Her mission is simply to help make amazing transformations possible. And Julie is gonna share her website with you and her contact details. And you can connect with her on Facebook or LinkedIn. She's gonna be talking to us today about nutrition for anxiety and the relationship between food and mood. And that's a really timely topic now with the world in the uncertain condition that it's in at the moment. So most of us are aware of the gut-brain connection, but how do we improve or change it in our daily lives? And so Julie will tell us all about that. So I'd like to hand it over to Julie now. So I'd just like to ask everybody to stay muted. And then if you have any questions, just go ahead and write it in the chat. Or Julie, do you want to be interrupted if people have questions? Or how do you want to handle
that? I'll pause for questions after every few slides or so, and just see if we have any pressing questions. I do have a lot of content, so I want to get through it. But I also want to be able to take questions if people have any.
Okay, cool. So I'll hand it over to Julie.
Awesome. Thanks, everybody. It's so great to see you all. I apologize for my very sunny room here. My blind broke. So I have no way to, unless I put a sheet up, I have no way to cover it up. But hopefully you guys can see me okay. So my name is Julie O'Connor, as Lisa mentioned. Thanks for that lovely introduction, Lisa. I wanted to really bring up the topic of anxiety because what? I know a lot of folks, I hear somebody on.
I
think you guys put yourselves on mute.
Patty, can you mute yourself, please?
Oh,
Patty?
My God, I'm sorry.
No problem.
It's okay,
sorry,
Patty.
Sorry. I thought I was muted.
No, you're not.
No worries. Yeah, so I wanted to bring this up because I think everyone is experiencing a bit of anxiety with everything that's happening and the election coming up. And I don't know how many of you know, but anxiety is already the number one mental health illness in the United States, with 1 in 3 people experiencing an anxiety disorder on any given day, which is pretty huge. And obviously with the recent events, this number has really skyrocketed. So we're all experiencing high levels or multiple levels of stress. And when we perceive something as stressful, as you probably have heard Dr. Rita Marie talk about, our perception of it creates a physiological response quite often. So whether, you know, our feelings of stress or our, you know, we have a tiger chasing us or whatever, whether that's real or not, we still have a response to that. And a lot of that is manifested in anxiety. So, and that also manifests in many other forms and can lead to depression. And, you know, or just a basic general sense of worry and unease quite often. So I'm going to start the presentation. I just want to make sure, can you guys see this? Can everybody see that?
Not yet. Just go ahead and share like we did before.
Okay. Sorry. Sharing helps. Sharing is caring. Here we go. There we go. All right. Can you see that?
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah.
Great. Okay. So the name of the presentation is Nutrition for Anxiety. So I just did a little bit of an intro there. And so what we're going to get into today, I'll talk a little bit about what the contents of the presentation are. But first, I want to just play for you a real short little animation.
It's a normal part of life to experience occasional anxiety. Anxiety is the mind and body's reaction.
Can you guys hear this and see it?
Dangerous or unfamiliar situations. Anxiety disorders are the most common and pervasive.
It's very low.
U.S. But anxiety can also be made worse by a lack of proper nutrients. According to the Anxiety and Depression Association of America, nearly 40 million people, 18%, experience an anxiety disorder in any given year. Much of our anxiety stems easily reversible functions in our brain and body chemistry that are the met nutritional needs. The importance of good nutrition and its effects on your emotional health may not seem intuitive at first glance, but now you will know how the foods you eat affects your physical well-being.
Okay, so that's just a little introduction to what we'll talk about today. What we'll get into in a little more detail are a couple of points you see here that anxiety and nutrition are very much connected. I think most of you are probably familiar with that. And also we're going to talk about how the gut and the our brain play a role in those two things working in balance together to help us reduce anxiety, and how diet plays such a big role in that. And then I'll talk about something else called the four R's. And if we have time, I can get into that in a little more detail. That's where we really get into, if we have really strong feelings of anxiety, of overwhelm, of stress, how going through a process like the four R's can help reduce that for us. So, how do you define anxiety, or what does that really mean for you, is a big question many people ask. And as you can see here on the little blues thing, it can mean a lot of things to a lot of people. There's no one real medical or scientific definition of anxiety, but basically what that means for us is how it makes us feel. If we're feeling stressful and our mind and body are reacting to stressful or dangerous or unfamiliar situations, we're experiencing anxiety, and that can be debilitating for many of us. And it may or may not be related to the diet that we have. So that's the challenge with this and the nuance. But I also want to point out that anxiety can also be very positive. And that's what that means is some anxiety can actually help motivate us to get our tasks and our daily to-do lists done, and keep us on task and motivated to get things accomplished that we need to accomplish. So as the video noted, anxiety disorders are the most common and pervasive mental disorder in the US. And the reason why I wanted to focus on anxiety as part of my practice and part of how I help people is because I had a very personal experience myself with anxiety. I spent, as Lisa noted in the intro, I spent 20 years in a corporate job and traveling probably 50% of the time. I had two little kids I was raising. My husband was also working full time. And I got to the point where I was experiencing a lot of physical maladies, like just extreme exhaustion, insomnia, mild depression. And one day I was at a coffee shop and I was looking at my computer and I was trying to get a presentation done. I was having a salad and a cup of coffee and I started to lose my hearing. And then suddenly I started to get nauseous and dizzy and I felt like I was going to pass out. And I wasn't sure what to do. I was in a busy place and I had a meeting coming up. So I didn't want to pass out in a coffee shop. So I grabbed my stuff. I ran out the door. I left all my food on the table. And I went out to my car and I was trying to dial 911 and I couldn't focus on my phone to dial the number or even call my husband. So it was a very scary experience. And I think I was able to dial 911, remember ambulances and fire trucks coming. And I thought, oh my gosh, when I woke up in the ambulance, I remember thinking, I hope nobody saw me. I hope nobody I know saw me. And unfortunately, the coffee shop was right across the street from my kid's school. So I actually know quite a bit of people that went in and out of this place. And that's what I was worried about, which is crazy when you think about what could have happened. And I had no idea what happened. But to make a long story short, when I got to the hospital, what I uncovered was that they did all my vital signs. They wanted to keep me overnight because they couldn't figure out what happened. And basically what came out of it is that the doctor said, well, I think you just had an anxiety attack or a panic attack. And I said, well, you know, what the heck are panic attacks and how can that occur and make you pass out and all those things? I was really worried about that and doubtful. I'm like, what the heck am I doing here? Get me out of this hospital. So you can see how things can really escalate with what's going on in the body. So anxiety also really affects our moods and just day to day. So food can also function as a driver of that deficiency or a building block to restoration for helping people feel better. We all hear about sugar and how sugar creates the sugar blues or can really make people feel like they're depressed or irritable. And that's definitely true when it comes to biology. And the gut microbiome also plays a role in the programming of what's called the HPA axis, which I'll talk a little bit about here in just a second. But I want to just pause here and see if anybody has any quick questions. I think I just want to make sure where everybody can see my slides and we're all good.
Question, if I could, Julie, you mentioned about the hearing loss that you happened when you had presumably panic attack. So why does the hearing get affected? Have you ever figured that one out? I've had that happen too.
No.
I was actually singing a trio and all of a sudden I couldn't hear anything.
Yeah.
Not a good thing to happen when you're singing.
Yep. No, oh my gosh, no. And I never did figure out why the hearing loss went. What the doctors were telling me was it could have been, it's a physical reaction. I know they explained something that when your body is flooded with calcium, you become, you know, your muscles don't work as well. Sometimes my hands were curling up in a really strange way that I couldn't control because it was a flood of chemicals going through my system. And I felt really nauseous. So they couldn't explain specifically why the hearing, and it really sounded like someone was turning the volume down on my hearing. It was very scary. So unfortunately, I don't know the biochemistry answer to the hearing part, but you know, they kept telling me I needed to go see a cardiologist because I was having heart problems. And once I did go to a regular doctor, I had an EKG. I had actually two EKGs because I had one that was abnormal and they had to get two out of three that were normal. So that was sort of scary, but everything was fine. I did have a little bit of high blood pressure. So there were literally physical responses to the stress that I was experiencing. And it took a while to figure that out. And it took a lot of doctor appointments. But then I sort of took it upon myself to change my, and I switched to a plant-based diet. And everything started to change from that point. I was able to sleep better. My stress was reduced. I also went off the caffeine. That was a big part of what I was experiencing, heart palpitations and some stress levels there. So that can have a huge effect on those types of things.
So while you were answering that, Julie, I looked at Dr. Google, and this is what they said about panic attacks and hearing loss, that when your body responds to stress, the overproduction of adrenaline reduces the blood flow to the ears, which can affect the hearing. So without a constant blood flow, the ear cells are damaged or even destroyed or can affect hearing. So it can cause immediate hearing loss. So that's just what I was able to find.
That's interesting. I'm glad you brought that up. And I remember in anatomy studying something about that. But it's funny, the doctor never was able to explain that to me.
You should have.
But it makes sense.
Yeah, it's just physiology. You have a lot of adrenaline. Anyway, but thank you.
I probably did go on Google at one point.
No.
So, So yes, we all know how stress in our lives, uncontrolled stress can affect, physically can affect our bodies. What I also want to talk about quickly here is sugar. That was something I had a real problem and I still do. I'm still a sugar addict to this day, but I have changed a lot of my diet and have had amazing outcomes from that. But I still have not been able to really cut out the sugar. I sort of go in phases. But here's what the research shows on the link between sugar and depression. There was a study done across six countries that found highly significant correlation between sugar consumption and rates of depression. So a lot of anxiety comes before medical states of depression. And frequent consumption of fast food and commercial foods, we know, can increase risk of anxiety and depression. Sugar sweetened drinks also really are, we know, contribution. And, you know, there was actually a big study done recently where the scientists followed that habits of over, I think, 49,000 women over 8 years. And found that sugar and processed grains increase the risk of depression. And when they had them going on mostly a fruit and vegetable diet, that decreased their risk of those maladies significantly. So I think it's important to bring the sugar piece up because we all struggle with it. And I think it's sort of one of these things every day. If we can just pay attention to cutting sugar back, some people are never going to be able to stop eating sugar completely, but significantly cutting it back really helped me deal with my anxiety at the time. So moving forward, so I just want to talk a little bit about the digestive system because we start to get into the HPA axis and why that's so important. So the three main functions of the digestive system, a little bit of anatomy here, are the digestion of food, of course, and the important piece of that is the absorption of nutrients. So it's not just digesting our food, being able to digest it first, but it's actually, are we absorbing the nutrients from the food that we're actually eating? And then the third piece is elimination. So are we actually able to eliminate food and waste properly from our system that needs to get out of our system? And so that's, these three things are really important when it comes to helping to reduce anxiety. So how do you know if your gut or your GI is contributing to symptoms? And, you know, a lot of people may think, well, I have GI issues all the time and I'm stressed out. But, you know, I think Dr. Rita Marie has some targeted questionnaires that you guys go through. But targeted questionnaires are really, really good way, even though sometimes they're long and it takes a while to fill them out, but really good way to see if that's something that's affecting you. And then the next level is blood testing. So lab analysis is big. There's quite a number of tests that really help talk about or that really help us understand what's going on at a nutrient level in your system so that we can see, well, you know, here's what's happening in your blood. Here's what's happening with your nutrients. You have too much of this or too little of this. It really helps us able to target that and make that analysis to put things back in balance. And that can have a huge effect. So that may require, you know, taking supplements or changing some food. It also can testing for food intolerances and allergies is a big part of this as well. So that would be more like the specialized testing that you see here. Let's move on. So how exactly does digestion sabotage mood? I know quite often I feel days where I'm super irritable, and I'm sure many people, for me, that transition time of day where my kids are coming off school, everybody's coming home from work, I'm trying to figure out what to make for dinner. I get real irritable and I'm really working on that. And I'm trying to figure out, okay, what can I do? And what am I eating throughout the day that's contributing to sort of this anxiety and irritability that a lot of people may feel at points of the day. So obvious things that talk about where digestion can affect mood are things like bloating, gas, excessive burping, pain in the GI area, irritable bowel contributes to that quite often, feelings of constipation or diarrhea or bone, you know, quite often. And then other medical disease or other medical diagnoses like Crohn's and diverticulitis and colitis, you know, the itises, the inflammation that's happening, all help or help to or contribute to how the HPA axis and the gut and the brain are talking to each other. So I'd like to play, and then there's some other not so obvious things on the right-hand side of the slide that can contribute also to how we're feeling on a day-to-day basis. Frequent headaches has a lot to do with diet. So I'm gonna quickly play, I hope this works, play a little video. It's called the food mood video that I think is really interesting. Let's see if I can get it to play. Can you guys see this?
Myself, I'm depressed.
Can you guys see the video?
No, we can just see your slide.
Okay, hang on one sec. I'm gonna go to share the video.
That's it.
All right, you got it?
There's a drug for depression. You're anxious, there's another drug for anxiety. You may be going a little bit crazy, then we have, you know, for that. Now, that's ignoring the underlying biochemical processes that's actually causing this depression.
I stuck with the diet for the remainder until my next visit with Dr. Mike, and I felt like a different person.
When people come to me with anxiety or depression, the first place I look is the gut.
The gut is connected to the immune system, is connected to the hormonal system, is connected to brain functioning, mood behavior, cognition. And because of that, we can influence all of these different systems at once through lifestyle inputs. And what is the most powerful lifestyle input available to us, in my opinion, is nutrition.
When people eat the standard American diet, like, you know, hamburgers and pizza and all these delicious things that we love so much, they're ingesting gluten and dairy and sugar. And after a while, we end up with a change in the way the intestinal lining actually works.
It's so important to remember that the ordinary actions you take on a daily basis have extraordinary effects on your health.
I am lit up that notion that diet can change your life. It starts with diet. It is life-changing.
I would never in a million years go back to that place and would never sacrifice my cognitive health over a bag of Doritos or something that maybe tastes pretty good. It's not worth it to me.
The power of lifestyle change, the power of addressing root causes in mental illness is available all of us, all the time. In fact, the solution may be as close as the end of your fork.
Okay, so that's a really powerful film that is being created right now. I don't believe it's out yet, but Dr. Mark Kynan is a contributor. And I think it's just a really great thing to think about, because I think a lot of us know this intuitively, but we don't always take action to really practice it. Can you guys see my slides again?
Yes. Yes.
Great. Okay. So as I've said before, the gut and the brain are connected. And that's really that's really where we get into the discussion about the vagus nerve and how that impacts our mood, our ability to focus, and our ability to digest food. So how is your gut connected to your brain? And what does that really mean? So this really gets into a discussion of the vagus nerve. And we've got the vagus nerve, which I said goes from the brain, goes from the brainstem in the picture you can see there, the brainstem down through, and it affects the diaphragm, and through the diaphragm, it affects the gut, and it affects the motility of the gut. So whether we're having normal waste excretion, whether we have constipation or diarrhea, and it affects the enzyme production in the gut. So whether, and that helps us to understand how we're digesting our food. And it affects everything really related to the gut. So a lot of people have impairment via the anti-inflammatory or the inflammatory, the colitises and all the itises that we talk about. But when you have that inflammation, that really affects how our gut is talking to the brain and how the hormones are balanced through the gut. And you might have heard the comment about how most of the neurotransmitters that we have in our brain are also found in our gut. And there was a study done, there was a, I forget the name of the doctor right now, in 1998, he wrote a book on that are basically all those neurotransmitters in our gut are found in our brain. And so it's really powerful information that helps us to uncover only really in the last 30 years, what's really going on and how that affects our mood. So the other way that your gut is connected to your brain is via the neurotransmitters. And there's two key ones that really affect our mood, and that's dopamine and serotonin. And those also reside in the gut as well. As I mentioned, the neurotransmitters that we have in our brain are also in our gut. So neurotransmitters or dopamine and serotonin are 80% of the serotonin that we make is actually produced in our gut. So when we don't absorb the amino acids or the right nutrients in our food, that's a problem. And we're not producing that serotonin that gets to our brain and makes us feel better. So that's, then there's, you know, the option, the opportunity for leaky gut. So if we're eating foods that are causing those tight junctions in our stomach lining to fall apart or to break, then we're really letting some of those chemicals out of our gut. And that affects also the balance of our digestive system and how serotonin gets to the brain. So how those neurotransmitters get to the brain. So that's the way the gut and the brain are connected. There's a, I could do a whole class on this and I have been in classes just on this one thing. But I think for this, for the purposes of this presentation, hopefully this is enough information for you to understand the of what foods we're eating, how that creates the motility we need in our gut and how those nutrients are getting to our brain. This slide you might have seen in one of Dr. Rita Marie's presentation. I love it because of the little heart, but this kind of goes a little bit deeper to the psychology of digestion. You know, we know and we talk about how digestion begins in your head and your heart and not your gut, but it really goes both ways, right? So it impacts digestion, impacts our thoughts, our fight or flight, our parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system, and the relaxation effects of a lot of what Dr. Rita Marie talks about with pre-meal rituals and heart math really affect your digestion. And it may not feel like it when you're doing it. I know, you know, you've got all these other things going on in your head, but when you slow down and really focus on breathing and focus on chewing and eating your food as you're eating it, and the, even that pre-meal ritual, when I started doing that, it really changed everything for me. And it really changed how my gut felt after I was eating. So hopefully you guys have had a chance to experiment with some of that through some of the classes that you're already involved in ERC. Okay, so there's a lot of information on this slide, and I'll post this presentation because there are links behind each one of these. But this just gives you an idea of some of the mood boosting nutrients that can really help create that feeling of more calm and more and less irritability and even reduced anxiety. So we know that nutrients in your food provide the building blocks necessary for a healthy brain and for healthy neurotransmitter function. These are the nutrients that are most associated with reducing risk of depression and anxiety. And this is based on dietary intake rather than supplements. And that's really what we want to focus on, is how to get the food in. And if we have to take supplements to balance things out, that's fine. But this is really focused on nutrients in food. So based on this list, you can see why moving towards a based eating pattern and away from more highly processed foods that are lack of these nutrients can help contribute to supportive mood and health naturally in a more of a plant-based eating pattern. And that's not to say that animal proteins and animal foods aren't part of that, because they absolutely are. And it's more of a personal choice, but there are quite a number of vitamins and nutrients that are in animal protein that are hard to find in vegetables. And that's why some people need to supplement with vitamin B12, for example. So, you know, things like cruciferous vegetables, which have fiber, folate, iron, and phytonutrients and antioxidants, as well as vitamin C, vitamin A, and zinc, which is really great for immune. You might have heard us, you guys been in the classes last week. Dr. Reed Marie talked about things to take for helping with the immune system. For a fish eater, fish is really great for B vitamins and iron, magnesium, and healthy fat, healthy fatty acids. So our MUFAs and our PUFAs, I call them, which are our monounsaturated fatty acids and our polyunsaturated fatty acids, which are healthy fats for us to eat. And those include EPA and DHA as well. So those are our omega-3 fatty acids. One thing I want to point out is if you click on when you have access to this presentation, you're actually, you go into presentation mode, you can click on each of these and it will link to the study that talks about these and why they're supportive for helping to reduce anxiety or depression. And depression is just a much stronger, it's still anxiety. It's more of a diagnostic. If you have a diagnosis of depression or some type of depression, you've probably experienced anxiety or you may experience anxiety daily in your life. And so the food you eat can really help reduce that over time. Leafy greens, you know, we talk about leafy greens a lot in Dr. Rita Marie's programs. You know, you get quite a number of nutrients from those, B vitamins, fiber, iron, magnesium, selenium, zinc, potassium, antioxidants, and then nuts and seeds are important as well if you can tolerate those. Those also contain lots of B vitamins, iron, fiber, magnesium, zinc. So there are some sources there also. If you follow Deanna Minnick, she is a dietitian that talks a lot about anxiety, food, and mood. And this is where I got a lot of the information is from her. She has such a great rundown of the nutrients and how they support you with anxiety. So you can, I've got her website listed there. You can check that out as well. So any quick questions before I move on? I'm going to go into the 4R process for if you really want to focus on cleaning up the diet. I'll just kind of gloss over the 4R process. We have about 15 minutes left, I think. So anybody have any quick questions?
Yeah, I do. It's Lisa. Can you just tell us which neurotransmitters are amplified in anxiety and which ones might be low?
So the kind of the mood boosting neurotransmitters, which are the serotonin, the dopamine, are really the big ones. So balancing those out are the ones that are going to make the most difference. And, you know, there's a lot of sort of ifs to that one, because some people have a lack of the neurotransmitters based on lifestyle and things that have happened long before. And they might, you might take an anxiety or a depression medication for that. And that's, you know, working with your PCP, and that will help to balance that out. But you can also get a lot of that through food. And there are, you know, serotonin containing foods that can help to increase that. And it could be subtle, but it also, depending on what your diet is, and every person's different, right, in their chemistry and how things manifest, really the two main neurotransmitters.
Thank you.
Does anybody, any of the other coaches that are on, do you guys have any other thoughts on that? Feel free to chime in.
You have a lot of material to cover.
Oh, Yeah. Okay. So I'll move on here and then we'll save some time at the end for questions. So a food-based approach, as we know, and we've been talking about, helps reduce anxiety, overwhelm, and can help reduce feelings of depression. The three or the four R's that I talk about, this is in the literature. There's a lot of scientific literature that goes through this. This isn't anything new necessarily. We don't always talk about it, but part of an elimination diet is probably the most extreme thing you can undertake to really balance out your gut and some of the issues if you're having those kinds of issues. But there are smaller things you can do first to help go through that process. And these are really what I call the four R's. And it's removing inflammatory food. So that would be the first step. So understanding what foods are inflammatory and taking those out of your diet at first. If you have an allergy or an intolerance, you know, removing gluten, removing dairy can be a really good first step. And taking one time can also help you to understand what changes you're feeling along the way. How does my mood feel? How does my gut feel as I take these things out of my diet? So repairing the GI lining and the microbiome, and that really has to do with replacing enzymes that are missing. You know, inflammatory foods are, like I said, are the gluten, the sugar, the corn, the soy, and the dairy. That sounds like a lot to remove at first. So some people really only get through the first part of this and they're like, wow, I feel better already. If you're still feeling like you've removed those inflammatory foods, repairing the gut lining might help. And that could be doing things like taking digestive enzymes. And Dr. Rita Marie has a module that talks a lot about that. And that helps to bring the microbiome back in balance and restore nutrient status. So if you find that you are lacking in micronutrients, you can replace that with food in your diet. And you can also do that through supplements. So those are two ways you can do that. And important for sometimes for balancing, a lot of people are having trouble absorbing certain nutrients. I know when I went and had my lab work done, I found I was extremely low in vitamin D. And that had a lot to do with my mood. Just by upping my vitamin D, I went from, I literally had one of the lowest numbers. I went to taking, I probably got very little vitamin D through food at the time. And I increased it by 10,000 IU temporarily. And it made an incredible effect on my mood and how I felt day to day. And that really took about a week or two to understand it. But that's, you know, my system and what I was eating. Just increasing vitamin D and vitamin B12 made a huge effect in how I felt day to day. So that's one way you can do that with micronutrients and supplements. And then the next thing would be, you know, we talked about removing inflammatory foods and adding foods that can help. So greens, we talked about berries, have the antioxidants. Any of the purple berries have the anthocyanins that help to create an antioxidant effect in your body. The high omega-3 fishes, salmon, anchovy, mackerel. Some of these things I would never eat before, mackerel out of a can, if it's a really good, from a well-sourced, wild-caught mackerel, actually can be really amazing. And I've learned to love it. And I live in the Pacific Northwest, so I get fresh wild-caught salmon all the time. Avocados, green tea, peppers, mushrooms, the foods you see there. So repairing the GI and the microbiome is kind of one of the key steps here. And part of that we can do with food again, and removing that bad gut flora, which could be going on in your body. And there are tests for that. And replacing those unfriendly organisms with the good probiotic, prebiotic and probiotic foods, nuts and seeds like almonds and chia, again, the greens, and this is where the bone broth comes in, because it can help replace fermented foods as well. So I know some of your coaches are really focused on fermented foods and probably have some great recipes that hopefully they can share. I've learned to like fermented foods as well, just because of the health effects of them. Sorry, was there a question?
No, okay. I think Nancy needs to mute herself. There's one person who's not muted. So Nancy, if you could mute yourself, it would be great.
I have a real big computer screen, so I'm kind of looking all over. I can see you guys are like over here, and then my slides are over here. So restoring, again, the focus of restoration is to eat foods that help rebuild the mucus layer and the gut lining, and that really helps with motility. It helps with leaky gut if you've been diagnosed with that. And it helps lubricate the digestive tract and create that balance. And so those neurotransmitters can get where they need to go into the brain. So herbs are really great supplements this process, like slippery elm. Dr. Rita Marie talks a lot about slippery elm and taking that as a supplement if you need to help repair that gut lining or help create that mucilaginous environment. Aloe vera is really good for that. And then there's some other recommendations there. And I think it's important to note the leaky gut. You know, a lot of times people don't know whether they have leaky gut. You know, your PCP or nutritionist or your coach, whoever you are seeing, can help. You know, a lot of the questionnaires that we have access to can help you understand, well, I have symptoms of leaky gut. So when toxins leak, what that is when toxins leak into the gut, They obviously affect our mood and memory and focus. And our stress response can affect how well we digest that food. Adrenaline and cortisol, which are the things that make us feel awake and alive and help us, you know, fight the tiger, right, that's chasing us. When that goes up, our digestion shuts down. So if you're in a state of constant fear or stress or anxiety or irritability, your cortisol is likely higher. And there are lab tests that you can get a lab test through your doctor or through your licensed nutritionist that can help look at your cortisol levels. So when that, typically when your cortisol is up, your digestion's not working properly because your body's so focused on lowering cortisol. And that creates a lot of problems with motility, constipation, gut pain, and even gas. So also elevated insulin levels can create that negative effect on the nervous system. So, you know, checking your blood sugar and, you know, if you're insulin resistant can really help you take action to reduce anxiety in that way. So that's a lot of information. I'm going to just talk back to the neurotransmitter piece here. You know, providing the building blocks to having a healthy neurotransmitter in your GI is a really a big piece of the rebalance. R, so the four R's, this is the last one. When the gut is inflamed and that HPA axis is imbalanced, that communication between the gut and the brain, then, you know, that also contributes to anxiety, to agitation, and panic. So as we continue to eat these healthy foods, bioavailable foods that we're able to absorb in our gut, then that creates a healthier environment so that we just feel more calm. We feel less anxious and more calm. And I don't want to discount the importance of lifestyle factors as well. It's not 100% food and diet, but it's a big part of that, right? A big piece of that too is just how we're living our lives and how we're doing with mindset. Are we taking time out for ourselves? Are we meditating? Are we moving? And, you know, are we having fun? Like, we hear Dr. Reed Marie talk about fun all the time. And that's such a big piece of it. I know I take time out to have a lot more fun than I used to. And it's had a huge effect. Even just sitting outside and looking at the birds has had a big effect sometimes on my mood and helping to calm things down. So as we start to wind down here, I want to focus on specific actions that you can take to reduce anxiety in your life. So number one is to assess your eating patterns. And an easy way to do that is diet recall. And there are ways we do that in the ERC program. And Dr. Rita Marie has, I don't know if you guys are tracking diet, or some of you may be tracking diet specifically with one-on-ones with your private coach, but just assessing your eating patterns is really a focus. Sometimes when you write down what you eat, you do a 3-day or a 5-day diet diary. As a nutritionist, I ask people to do that all the time. People hate doing it, but when you do, and then I plug that in, you can really see what you're getting too much of and what you're getting very little of in your diet. So that is a really great way to start. And just stopping and thinking about, how does your gut feel? How does your gut feel before you eat? And how does your gut feel after you eat? And really pay attention to that and see if, you know, removing dairy, removing gluten, some of those things in the first R can help change that. And then what can you add to your diet today or next week? And what can you omit from your diet today and over the next week? And I think, as I mentioned, the importance of breathing and meditation is really, I can't stress that. It says mediation. That should say meditation, maybe mediation too, but breathing and meditation is really, really important. And daily movement, if you can do it, if you can get out there and you're able to, daily movement is extremely important for helping with that, move things through the system. So, you know, I think it's really important to note here, you don't have to make really wide sweeping changes all at once. One thing at a time, one step at a time can really have a significant effect. I thought I was overwhelmed when I first went through this whole debacle with stress at work. But just changing my diet helped enough that I felt so much better and I slept so much better. So, you know, I think assessing your eating patterns is really important for that step. Getting some labs, either through your PCP or through your licensed nutritionist or whoever you're working with, can really help you understand those imbalances and where you have the greatest risk for deficiency or insufficiency. So one of these, the little quote there at the bottom, you can't connect the dots looking forward, you can only connect them looking backwards. I just really love that quote because I think once you understand how your food affects how you feel as you're making changes, that's when you can really put it all together and create a protocol or a lifestyle that supports you and helps you feel better for the long haul. So does anybody know who said this quote? Trick quiz question number one. No guesses?
Mark Hyman?
Nope. He would probably say that. Any other guesses? I'll give you a clue. He is a tech executive, actually. Not a health person. That's my dog barking. Okay, so
Steve Jobs.
Here's what he said exactly. Yeah. I just love this quote because I think it just helps me think a lot about the path that I was on to creating a lot of, you know, reducing anxiety, sleeping better, getting off of sleep medication, getting off of high blood pressure stuff, getting off of all that stuff. So it really, really helps. And that's what keeps me looking forward, keeps me moving in the positive direction of eating a healthy diet and feeling better. So I love what he says at the end. This approach has never let me down. It's made all the difference in my life. Okay, so that wraps up what I have prepared. I just want to provide these resources for you guys. So these are all books that I've referred to and read and love and find super important. The ones on the left-hand side are resources that Dr. Drew Ramsey, he is a nutritional psychiatrist. And I've been watching him. He just released another book. He has another book coming out in March that I can't wait to read. I geek out on this stuff. Another really good one is This Is Your Brain on Food by Uma Naidu. She is a Harvard-trained nutritional psychiatrist and medical doctor. But these are some really great. And then I've linked the Food Mood film down below, the trailer for that. I don't know when that's coming out, but I'm super excited for that because I think it's a message that's not spread enough in, especially in the current environment. So thanks everybody for your time. We can take time for questions. I don't know if we have anything else during this hour. I love this little cartoon. You wouldn't let this happen to your phone. You let your phone run out of battery. So don't let it happen to you either. So let's keep eating those good foods and, there's my information there. Let me know if you guys have any questions. And with that, I'm finished.
Thank you, Julie. That was very, very informative and gave us a lot of food for thought. I have a question. You mentioned the vagus nerve and the importance of the vagus nerve. Do you have some exercises you can recommend to us to do?
Ooh, exercises. You know, I am not an expert in that, but I default to the low aerobic, low impact exercises for that, mostly yoga, because certain yogic movements that are focused, like the twists and the stuff that is the poses that are focused sort of in this area here, really help to get the gut motility moving. So I think yoga is a great exercise for that. And it doesn't have to be a lot. It could be, you know, 20 minutes of yoga poses a day.
I could just add to that.
And focus on the core exercise. Yes.
That's great. Those are great. And then some really easy ones that we can do, laughing and gargling. Those are things that stimulate the vagus nerve. Just easy things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Laughing.
Yeah, laughing, gargling.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's, it's really important. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more about the vagus nerve and how it impacts perhaps on anxiety.
Oh, you mean, so you want you right now, or do you want to do that like in another presentation?
Well, just briefly.
That could be a whole other presentation.
Well, just in a couple of sentences. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So the way that happens is you've got, mostly because you've got neurotransmitters, right? You know, people that are suffering from anxiety are a lot of times having that balance of neurotransmitters. And I mentioned the two key things that are really important is the dopamine and their serotonin. But when those are still the, it's complicated because the HPA axis is affected by the and the adrenal glands. And a lot of those neurotransmitters are being communicated by whether those glands are operating functionally and optimally or not. And so the way you can tell whether that's happening is through lab testing. But when that's not happening optimally, that has effects in the gut, and that can create, you know, some of the imbalances and the feelings that are coming up with the lack of those neurotransmitters, because those things aren't functioning optimally. So they're not, the communication pathways aren't going back and forth or mutative, right? They're not happening like they should when we have those imbalances in some of those chemicals and some of those neurotransmitters. That's probably not a great description of it, but it's pretty complicated.
Thank you. No, it's great. And it just emphasizes the importance of the gut-brain connection and that the body's interconnected and the vagus nerve.
You know, and all those things the vagus nerve connects it all. And it really, from the top, you know, from up in the thyroid area all the way down to the gut. And there are anatomical pictures of how that works. I think the slide I put in there, I think it was slide 9. Slide 9 shows it. It's not a great picture, but
no, it was great. It was great. Yeah. And just to reinforce to everybody listening that our gut motility is really important. So, and if it's not, if your vagus nerve isn't working optimally, you can either be constipated or you can have diarrhea. So it has a real impact on our gut and our elimination. So yeah, thank you very much, Julie.
Yeah, thanks. Great, I hope that was helpful to you guys. I hope you learned something. I think the big takeaway there is to take action, right? If you're experiencing these types of things, if you're feeling anxiety, you know, make small changes in your diet, make small changes in your mindset, and see how you do from there. And I think reaching out to your private coaches or in your coaching groups, you can have more discussions on this and go in more depth if there's interest too. Okay. Anything else?
I wanted to let you know that I shared a resource here. It's a vagus nerve info that if anybody's interested, they can download it. It's drever.com. So it's really good information
on
there. Yes, it's in the chat if anybody wants it.
Yeah, thank you. That's great. And also, sorry to ask, Julie, I just wanted everybody to, you know, to just for you to reinforce it. We have kind of like some non-negotiables working with Dr. Rita Marie. So gluten and dairy and sugar are probably the three big culprits. So, how do you recommend, and then of course on the other side of it is checking blood sugar. So blood sugar balance is really important for reducing anxiety or keeping anxiety at bay. So do you recommend like an elimination diet, or what do you recommend? Like, where do you start?
Well, I think that goes back to the four R's. The first of the four R's really focuses on just reducing those foods that, like what you mentioned, gluten. We know gluten is inflammatory, so dairy is inflammatory. So reducing those two things from your diet is a good start. I don't think people necessarily, this is my personal opinion, but I don't think an elimination diet right out of the gate, unless you've been meeting with or have talked to a nutritionist or your coach, and that's what's recommended for you, babes. And they're saying, yep, you need an elimination diet, go for it. But if you're just trying to do this yourself day to day, just really taking out the gut or the gluten in the dairy and the soy could be start. And that's a lot, right? And the sugar, right? I mean, I think if, like, I know I started out with removing dairy and sugar. I didn't immediately remove gluten. And then when I went plant-based, I kept a little bit of the gluten in, but I just reduced it quite a bit. And that made a difference for me, but it may not for everybody. So I think it's really starting. You can start with sort of those inflammatory foods, the gluten, the dairy, the sugar, and see how you feel. And if you need to do more, a full elimination diet, then you can proceed in that way. Does that make sense?
That's great. That's great. Thank you.
Anything else?
Julie, if I could ask you, you mentioned about brown rice as among those things that can help rebalance neurotransmitters. Can you explain why brown rice can have that impact? I thought rice was something to be avoided.
Well, I guess, and that would depend on if you can tolerate brown rice and grains because of the, and there's a fiber, germinated brown rice has GABA in it, GABA, and that is the mood calming neurotransmitter. So that can help affect that. But if you can't tolerate brown rice, then that's not something you would want to include in your diet.
And brown rice can increase serotonin. And there's a book that came out in the, I don't know when it came out, but it's called Potatoes, Not Prozac. And it talks about having—
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, it talks about having carbs, especially at night, to help the serotonin go across the blood-brain barrier. Because tryptophan, for example, one of the amino acids that helps build the building blocks of serotonin, has a hard time getting across the blood-brain barrier. So it's best to have a source of carb. It needs a source of carb to do that. And this the author was postulating that potatoes, not Prozac, would help with anxiety if you had enough carbs. So that's where we have to find the sweet spot for our carb intake, because we do actually need some carbs, and we need carbs for our moods. And sometimes we have low moods because we don't have enough carbs in our diet. I mean, the whole low carb or no carb phase has knock-on effects on our mood, on our thyroid, and on our gut because of the need for fiber for our microbiome. So we just have to find the sweet spot, and obviously finding the carbs that are not inflammatory for you or eliciting some kind of a food sensitivity for you.
Thanks, Lisa, that's super helpful. I love that book.
Yeah.
I was just looking at the chat. This presentation, do these get posted today?
No.
So people can access
it. It won't be posted today, but we'll send it to our back office people, and then it'll be posted on the call recordings for the ERC. When you go to ERC or you go to your Unstoppable Health community and you go to the recordings page, there is a NEC content call, and that's where you'll link to the recording of this call and the presentation. But you'll get a notification, and you can just make sure you check back there in a week or two. I don't know how long it takes them to post them, but they are posting things, they meaning that admin people are posting things pretty quickly.
And I'm happy to share it if anybody, you know, really needs it or wants it sooner. Just reach out to me and I can share it too, a version of it. The PDF will also have the links, by the way. The recorded presentation, I guess, is what you're talking about, Lisa, that takes a little longer. I get that. Yeah.
Yeah, the recorded presentation, and I think there'll probably be PDF of the PDF as well of your PowerPoint will be available. All right.
Great. Well, thanks everybody.
Well, thank you, Julie. Thank you for everybody for showing up. Does anybody have any more questions? Or Ronnie?
Yeah.
Okay,
Ronnie.
Go ahead.
Ronnie.
So on that PDF, are the links going to be live to take you to those, or?
Should be.
So they'll take you to
the studies
or whatever, like if you want to look at it further?
Yeah.
Yes. Yep, if you want to read further, the links will take you to the studies. And I also have references, additional references at the end of the presentation that are just more general that kind of go a little bit further into some of the other things I mentioned throughout the presentation as well.
Thank you.
The only thing I didn't reference in there was some of the information I actually got from Dr. Rita Marie's content over time that I just gleaned. I should probably put Dr. Rita Marie's site on there, but we're already in her group, so I just figure you know she's a reference.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
Yeah, she's a library. She's a library.
It's a library. I don't know how she remembers it all. Yeah, but that's, yeah. All right, everybody. Well, okay. Thank you so much. Thanks, Lisa, for facilitating.
Well, thank you, Julie, for your wonderful presentation. And thank you, everybody, for showing up. We have a big group today, and I'm very happy that so many people showed up for this very timely and important presentation. So if there are no more questions, I'm going to stop the call or end the call.
Great job.
Okay. All right. All right, great.
Bye, everybody. See you soon.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.